This is Elizabeth Fergus Jean, January 9th, 2009, Illuminating Letters, Numinous Encounters with the Kabbalah. This was recorded on DVD, and it includes, the DVD has a number of images. The DVD is in the library at the Jung Society.
Elizabeth Fergus Jean, she has a master's in fine arts from the UW, from our very own. And then she also has her doctorate from Pacifica. She is a cultural anthropologist, an artist, and an educator. And her she focuses on the depth dimensions of image, memory, and creativity. Her book, Illuminating Letters, which is what she's going to be speaking on tonight, is for sale here. It's a special price for us. It's $13. So. Has the illustrations on the back and the text inside. Elizabeth also was a founding faculty member of the Humanities Program at Pacifica, and she currently teaches at the Columbus College of Art and Design. Without further ado, please welcome Elizabeth Fergus Jean.
Thanks. Everybody can hear me? Happy to be back in Seattle again. Wow. I want to just, before I start, I would like to go over my process of how I like to talk. I love dialogue. I love the movement that goes back and forth with the audience. So feel free at any time to share a question, an idea, a thought, something that's going along. I've got the talk broken down into sections. And I really want to pause at the very least after each section so we can talk about things then rather than waiting to the end. We'll talk at the end too, but rather than holding things, because I know myself, sometimes when I see something, the question's right there, and by the end of the evening, whew, it's gone. So I really would like to just have that kind of constant dialogue with you all. I am an artist. First and foremost, it's my primary language. My intellect is visual. So I'm in translation right now. Words are translation for me. Because of that, and because I'm so visual, I do things up here. And so words will be up here too, because as a visual learner, I need to see words. Okay, so I've got words down here and I got words up here. So for those of you who don't want to be looking at things, who don't like PowerPoints, well, I hope you look at the images. But I also have words, and when I have quotes, I have them up here. So if you can look at me if you don't want to look at that. I've given you all an outline also, just so that you have a sense of the territory that we're going to cover. Hopefully, we'll be able to cover it all. But I think that just helps. So the primary talk is about this experience that I had when I painted the Hebrew alphabet. And what happened is that I went into a static trance and I heard the letters speak. And that those stories from the letters I now call their prayer poems. The book talks about that, and that's the story I'm going to be sharing tonight. The book also has an essay by Christine Downing. I don't know if you all know her. She's from around here. She speaks on the history of the alphabet and the magical qualities of the alphabet. And Rabbi Mel Gottlieb also has an essay in the book on the depth dimensions of the Kabbalah. So before I share my story, what I'm going to begin with is kind of just a general explanation of this concept of the numinous and why so many people say that it defies explanation. So we're all working from this kind of same territory. Then I'm going to share my story. And then what we'll do is we'll go into aspects of how do we witness the numinous, and we'll have that discussion. Before I begin, I want to say a little bit about language. And David Abram in his book Spell of the Sensuous, notes that when the Semitic scribes developed the alphabet around 1500 BCE, they created a character or a letter for each of the consonants. The vowels, the sounded breath that must be added to the written consonants in order for them to become alive and to speak, had to be chosen by the reader, who would then vary the sounded breath according to the written text. The reader, therefore, made the words come to life, so to speak, by adding the breath to the vowels. So my paintings of the Hebrew alphabet, which, right there, of the 22 consonants are like this as well. The viewer adds the breath, the inspiration, as they view and reflect on the painted letter, thus bringing them to life, allowing the letter to speak in its unique story to them. To inspire is to breathe life into a form, animating it so that it may have its own life. Therefore, we can imagine that as an image or an idea may inspire us, we in turn inspire the image or idea with unique form or story with our engagement with it. And we know today language has become really fixed, right? And it has these very specific meanings. Abram said, it separated itself from the animated flux of the world. Listen to this.
The missile knows where it is at all times. It knows this because it knows where it isn't. By subtracting where it is from where it isn't, or where it isn't from where it is, whichever is greater, it obtains a difference or deviation. The guidance subsystem uses deviations to generate corrective commands to drive the missile from a position where it is to a position where it isn't, and arriving at
My son found that. I love that. So that really shows us what's happened to language. Right? So what happens when we reanimate letters? What I discovered by sitting with each letter form and allowing it to speak, I could see and hear its story. This is not one of my pieces. I found, but this to me addresses the same concept. Who created the list and the mailing that had the list and created the website link with Jung and the Kabbalah? Someone here, I don't know who it was, for your mailing. Anyways, by snooping that, I came across this artist whose work I felt was very sympathetic. All of us have this ability if we move into the time of the letters, or for that matter, for the world of the trees, and we hear them speak. This begins by moving our concept of time, which is so highly scheduled, to the hour, to the minute, to the second. And by moving into a state of mind where we, in a sense, have no sense of time, this movement allows us to move into the image's time and into the realm of mythic experience. We can imagine this realm as a realm of sacred time, a time that does not flow in linear historic waves, but instead moves in undulations and spirals. I believe this opening up and letting go allows us to bridge the realms between parallel universes, between conscious and unconscious knowing. Jung referred to this as a transcendent function, a term he used to help delineate how the conscious and unconscious communicate. It is through this process that individuals are able to bridge these seemingly opposite states and by doing so, begin to have a broader understanding of the self. So as we now begin, I would like you all to shift into that mythic imagination. And I'd like to start by reading one of these prayer poems and showing you the Samech. Eternal burning flame of life, encircle my heart. Hold my spirit as it ebbs and flows to unseen rhythms. Tender is this spirit, like the crystal lace of a snowflake yet fallen. There is terror in life. There is terror to enter into the blessed heat of God. Burning with such desire to unite, to become one endless flame, flickering in eternal darkness, wed with God. The dark and firm soil supports life, fashioned into rocky support, visible, felt, perceived. Yet what lies beneath is the endless void where life spirals, 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 up and down a fiery labyrinth. Footprints press into the earth, walking in circles, apparently lost, obviously found. It is the most simple of unions. So let's move and talk about this notion of our understanding of the numinous and why it defies explanation. So the word numen implies Godhead or deity. By extension, numinous could be considered an encounter with a Godhead or deity. And with such an encounter, there is a sense of awe. There is a feeling of encountering something wholly other. Our feeling of the numinous and responses to the numinous are not ordinary feelings simply intensified. They are unique. And I use that word in its original meaning, meaning one of a kind, or sui generis, meaning in a class all by itself. Rudolf Otto has written extensively about the numinous in his book, The Idea of the Holy. And it's important to look at his findings. I will also be sharing my experiences, which sometimes directly oppose what Otto has said, which to me exemplifies how truly unique these experiences are to the individual. So, Rudolf Otto. He states that there is only one way to help another to understand the numinous, and that is by to be guided and led by, quote, a discussion of the matter through ways of his own mind, so through ways of the individual's mind, until the numinous begins to stir within them, to into a life and into consciousness. He speaks of the importance of finding similarities or relationships to previous experiences that can assist in evoking the numinous to be awakened in the mind. And I would like to add, to also be awakened in the heart. So it's my hope tonight that in our discussions we will have these remembrances of how we individually recall those moments. Oh, sorry. I want to go back one. So these two quotes by Otto, the creature feeling, the note of submergence into nothingness before an overpowering absolute mind might of some kind. So there's this submerges, just this losing, in other words, kind of a losing of self. And then a character which cannot be expressed verbally can only be suggested indirectly through the tone and content of a human's feeling response to it. And then, this is my emphasis, that this response must be directly experienced in oneself to be understood. In other words, we need to have that experience ourselves to truly gain that understanding. For the creature feeling and the sense of dependence to arise in the mind must be experienced, the noumen must be experienced as present. Otto states that noumenness is felt thus as objective and outside the self. One place where I disagree. For me, the experience have felt so much more like a merging with the divine, where there is no separation between myself and God. It's as if God's flowing through me. Mysterium tremendum. So Otto uses this term to really help explain and define this concept of the noumenness. So mysterium is something that is hidden, something that is beyond our understanding, right? And tremendum, something that is fearful mystery, okay? And then he has these aspects that are contained within it. So let's look at these. First is that aspect of awfulness. So we look at that and we see awe, full. So filled with this notion, filled with awe. Otto puts it this way. The feeling of it at times may come sweeping like a gentle tide, pervading the mind with a tranquil mood of deepest worship. It may pass over into a more set and lasting attitude of the soul, continuing, as it were, thrillingly vibrant and resonant, until at last it dies away and the soul resumes its profane, non-religious mode of everyday being. It may burst into sudden eruption from the depths of the soul with spasms and convulsions, or lead to the strangest excitements in intoxicating frenzies. So we think of the maenads, we think of Dionysian, right? It has its wild and demonic forms, and it can sink into almost grisly horror and shuddering. It has its crude, barbaric antecedents and early manifestations. And again, it may be developed into something beautiful and pure and glorious. It may become hushed, trembling, and speechless in the presence of whom or what, in the presence of that which is mystery, inexpressible, and above all creatures. The element of overpoweringness. So with that, it's the emotion of, you know, and Otto uses this term, Henri Corbin uses this term, I guess they were all using this term, creature, this sense of being, right? Creature being. Humanness. It is the emotion of a creature submerged and overwhelmed by its own nothingness, in contrast to that which is supreme above all creatures. Okay? Yeah? Element of energy urgency. It clothes itself in symbolic expressions, vitality, passion, emotional temper, will, force, movement, excitement, activity, impetus. So there's, we feel that energy, that urgency. Holy other. Holy other. Yeah. So outside the sphere of the usual, the intelligible, the familiar. And then the element of fascination. So before I shift into my story, how are we? Questions? Comments? Anything? Are we all? Yeah.
Well, I've got a
Yeah. One, two, three of God.
It's part of the integral handover kind of stuff.
Okay.
And he talks about how there's three different ways to experience God, and people have preferences, and cultures have preferences, and they all work fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, God inside, there's God in relationship, and then there's God everywhere.
Yes.
And they're all,
yes. Yeah.
All good and
nice. That's a wonderful point. And exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good.
Just to follow up, I was struck with that too. Just that, and you were talking, it just immediately felt like it was a sense of the way the sexless experience, perhaps, and that or are drawn to more kind of the spiritual growing edge, objective other, not myself.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yes. Nice. Yeah. Where we're going. That's good. She's not a plant. Okay. Any other questions before we move right to that? Or comments? Or yeah? Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to share my story, which is, for me, awe-filled. For me, holy other. Very overpowering. It's very urgent and full of fascinating encounters. This Rumi quote is very important to this body of work. It's in the beginning of the book. It's in the beginning of the portfolio. To me, it touches upon my experience, this particular experience, and also my making experience. In your light, I learn how to love. In your beauty, how to make poems. You dance inside my chest where no one sees you. But sometimes I do, and that sight becomes this art. So you dance inside my chest where no one sees you, but sometimes I do, and that sight, that insight, becomes this art. I love the image here also of dance, because it stirs within me action and movement. Dance isn't passive. Even if we dance alone, when we dance, we're engaging our body to flow to inner and outer rhythms, to dance to rhythmic drums or to the leaves blowing in the trees. We move with these rhythms, and in this movement there is a shift of our awareness as we move out of our left brain and do-si-do into our right. We can awaken to joy, to love, and to mystery. Indeed, dance has been used in worship and prayer for thousands of years. But this talk isn't about dance per se, but the metaphor of dance is a vital one to grasp. For in our dance with life, our movements, our actions, our letting go and opening up can impact how and what we see, feel, taste, sense, and experience in life. Dance in some ways pushes us to the edge. The edge of where our body ends and another begins, the edge of being in control and losing control, the edge of conscious awareness and slipping into intuitive, unconscious rhythms. This edgeness, I would suggest, defines two very distinct realms, one being the outer secular realm, the other being an inner sacred experience of being. As an artist, I find myself often with a foothold in each, simultaneously between this imaginary line, with one side grounded in rationality and the other side within this, the mysteries and mysterious aspects of life. We all have this ability to dance into, to sidle up next to, our intuitive knowings. You dance inside my chest. How can we illuminate the God that dances within us? How can we share this experience? So I'd like to share mine right now of one such encounter I had. I began working with the Hebrew alphabet in 1999 while I was a graduate student at Pacifica working on my PhD in myth, specifically when I was taking a class on monotheistic traditions with Christine Downing. This first encounter with the Hebrew alphabet began what was to become a five-year odyssey of ecstatic wonder and numinous encounters. To embrace the numinous, seeing God face to face, so to speak, I have found that one must open up to the unexpected. Indeed, for me, it is important to lovingly receive images that are presented and to be aware of the way in which they are presented to me. For both the content and the process of image are undeniably gifts from the gods. I have learned this lesson in a multitude of arenas within my life, in meditation, in prayer, in nature, and while immersed in my creative process. For me, by letting go of everyday surface realities, I find I can slip into altered states of being. Before I began working with the Hebrew alphabet, I was fully enmeshed in a painting series that I entitled Archaic Letters. This series began when letter forms began to appear in my dreams and waking visions. These letters came to me as dark and veiled forms and seemed to be emerging from the caves of their birth. Or perhaps I was within their caves, witnessing their birth as they danced and twirled through the air. I could smell the musky, rich earth that permeated them and the blood of their birth. And as I painted these letters, I had the sensation that I was witnessing their creation. Thus, I was a spectator, not the creator-maker. Yet as these letters took form, their forms began to move and undulate, and with this movement came my desire to engage with them, to move with them, to dance with them. I felt the need to press my hands into their warm bodies and onto the emergent walls of their surroundings. Whee! Are we okay with that? Okay. Oh, good! Well, there you go. They were seductive, and their sensuous forms enticed me to interact with them. In essence, I fell in love with these letters. Or perhaps it's better to say Eros was awakened within me. Either way, they created an aura of timelessness, the odor of fecundity, and an experience of illo tempore. These letters, now so very old and worn, were nonetheless full of power and strength at their beginning. I experienced the archaic letters as subtle bodies that called out to me and, in a sense, awakened my understanding of them. Thus, my experience of these letters as sensual, embodied forms felt similar to the way I had always experienced other images. What was new for me was the fact that these were letters, which would inevitably lead me to words, And up until that point in my life, images, visual images, had always presented to me in a very distinct way, separate way, from words in the written language. This experience with the archaic letters created a territory from which I could now imagine and engage with words in a very new way. Therefore, when it came time to begin my research for the Monotheistic Traditions paper, it seemed like a natural extension that I would want to write about the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, since I was enmeshed in the visual territory of letters via the archaic paintings. When I began to dive into the Hebrew alphabet, I quickly came to realize through my initial readings the importance of the alphabet that and how it plays within the experience and understanding of divine energy as encountered with the Kabbalah. This felt similar to my experience of painting the archaic letters and to the story I had witnessed in giving them form, the sense that their energies and the elemental manifestations of the spirit are one and the same. Therefore, I sought texts that were specifically focused on the Kabbalah, beginning with the much recommended author Gershom Scholem. One evening, as I sat in bed reading Scholem, all of a sudden, a sudden flash came through my body. I couldn't find what I was searching for through these texts and written words, and that I needed to experience the alphabet myself. The letters called out to me again, and I heard their call. The realization came to me I needed to paint and in turn be transformed by each letter, and in this way open myself up to the divine held within. I placed the book on the nightstand beside my bed, and I never reopened it. Now knowing my best source of learning would come to me through direct experience with the letters themselves. This is how I began my entry into the mysteries surrounding the Hebrew alphabet. Now, I've always had the ability to shift easily in and out of the liminal realm. These moments of slipping into and simultaneously slipping away led me to the numinous. These were, and still are, simple moments of ecstasy and often bliss. Yet they are just as likely to be terrifying encounters, frightening to the core being. But as an artist, I also understand the potency of these encounters. When the divine touches us, no matter what form it takes, it is difficult to remain inert and inactive. A natural reaction to such an encounter is response in the concrete. As a visual artist, this most often occurs in creating an artwork that involves working in a trance-like state, where the act of creating is perceived as sacramental. Indeed, for me, the manifested form of such encounters is sacred. Therefore, although I did not know exactly what I would experience when I painted the alphabet, I did approach the project with reverence and solemnity. Even in the beginning, the letters were very insistent. They were pressing on me from all directions to get started, and so I immediately opened myself up to them. As with most of my other artistic work, when an image presents, it does so in a very particular medium. It's as if the images themselves select a material from which they will emerge, rather than from a conscious decision that I make. Therefore, when I knew I was to paint the Hebrew letters, I also knew within myself that they were to be made in graphite and watercolor. This knowing is intuitive and instinctual. It's the voice of subtle bodies giving shape to their own forms. Aleph. I began with the first letter, Aleph. I let it take shape. First, using graphite, I drew the letter. Just the letter form. And it was very important for me to try to make that very simple, but really beautiful. And then I continued and began with very small strokes and let the letter fill in and give itself shape and life and form. And with each stroke, I was drawn deeper and deeper into this sacred realm and deeper into this sense of trance. So once the letter form, just this part, was formed, then I stopped and I looked at my watercolor palette, and I instinctively knew it had to be golden. And so I started to fill in with this golden light. And after an hour or so of painting, I started having this connection and this relationship with alchemy. And then I had this kind of kindling of a dream image that I had had where a leaky water pipe caused a fire in my studio. And then I suddenly started to hear the letter speak. I heard it within me. And so I heard, fire ignites water. It causes to flow forth in billowing streams the flames of desire to unite with God. Words then started flowing through me, and I didn't know what was happening. So when I paint, you know, I kind of have this whole array of things around. So one of the things that I do to get the paint just right is I have a little extra piece of watercolor paper. So I grabbed, I had my pencil, and I started jotting down. And when I paint, my vision totally shifts. And so the only thing that I really can see is the painting itself, and everything else becomes very blurred. So I really couldn't see the words that I was writing. It's kind of this blurred vision. And, you know, there was this sense of, like, excitement. I mean, the letter felt absolutely alive within me. But simultaneously, there was this incredible calm. And I felt that there was this wisdom that we all have, all of us, deep within ourselves. And it was just pouring out. So these letters that came out are what I now call the prayer poems. And each letter, when I painted them, I had these experiences. Bet. I continued to paint the letters one by one, and each time they continued to plumb my depths in different ways. Although words alone can't adequately touch upon what passed through me as I encountered the letters, perhaps the valences of paint and the words from the prayer poems that came forth are closer to giving voice to these numinous encounters. Gimel. I did not rush to complete the alphabet, for the process itself and the experiences it gave form to were to be savored. I certainly felt then, and I continue to feel now, that my work thus far is only a beginning, and that letters will continue to reveal mysteries of life as I move into their full presence. Ballot. As I have mentioned, it took over 5 years to paint the entire 22 letters, for I found that I couldn't paint them when I wanted to paint them. I had to wait until they called me to paint them, revealing aspects of the Kabbalistic mystery of opening to and receiving the wisdom of God. What the stories revealed to me was first and foremost was the divine within each letter, their divine origin. As such, the letters embodied aspects of divine wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, whose depths could fill an entire universe. Embodying such an unscalable energy, there was no way then or now to fully grasp the meaning and potential of each letter. Hey. For me, this experience of revelation was and continues to be an intense spiritual connection. For even now, when viewing the letters, I reconnect with the afforded revealing moments when everything appears clear, and I once again both sense and embrace the connections and patterns within life. In the final analysis, it is as if my life experiences, energies, and intuitions were the media used to illuminate the letters. Or possibly it was the act of finding the letters that illuminated my life experiences. In reflection, I imagine that what is revealed in my ecstatic visions and numinous encounters can once again be personally experienced within each individual as they sit in reflection and meditation in the presence of each letter. Bob. Cyan. Cut. Good. Lamed. Ma'am. Okay. Dasty. Cough. Raish. Shin. I'm going to read this one before we take a break. Within the void, your flame grows bright, pulsing, flickering, burning, with a fiery passion to ignite faith, wisdom, love, grace. Being drawn inward to learn, being drawn outward to learn. Faith, wisdom, love, grace. Shin speaks, I am within, yet I am without. Know me, and you will know that I both create and am consumed within the flames of life. So, can we have lights? You know, were these images a little blurry? Was it okay? Okay. My experience, and one of the things that I believe, again, this is my belief, is that if we sit with each letter, we will hear the story we are meant to hear. And it is tapping into that wisdom, that divine wisdom that we all have. I'll just tell you my own faith, and that is, I'm deeply spiritual, but I don't follow one tradition, and especially after, that's just the way I've always been. I guess my predominantly most frequent way to experience God has always been in nature, and I have just found every tradition just is so beautiful. And so I did not have a Jewish tradition, although Mel says in a former life I was clearly Jewish. And I'm like, yeah, probably. I don't know. So I don't know. I just wandered. I don't know where I am. Yeah.
Is there a particular way
that they would call? There was no particular way. You have to, an important thing to know, and I think this is true with anything, is that if you have a practice, you're a much more receptive vehicle. All right? I really believe that. And so I am a maker. I'm always making. And so images are always flowing through me, slamming. You know, I mean, sometimes. And sometimes they'll be really demanding, you know, like, I had never painted in watercolor or graphite before this series. It just came that way. I just have now another project that, and it just came in gouache, and actually gouache is, you know, it's opaque watercolor. Well, I've never worked in it, so now I'm, it's just something, they just come in a form. And but if you have that, if you always work and I always paint or I'm always making, then you're always at the ready. And so I was, it was just kind of like always being at the ready. And then it's like the raccoon, you're at the ready and there's the raccoon. Yeah. Again, it's that tapping into, it's that opening up, it's that allowing yourself to really reconnect and into that, the cosmos wisdom, the God wisdom. I mean, and as much as that is true, how we give voice to that, how we articulate that, how we share that, there are all these different ways. And it's not like one way is better than the other. That's why we, so many wars are around my God's better, my God's the God, right? Your God. Yeah. Yeah.
So humans, we have these different sensory systems. Mm-hmm. We got the visual, we got the audio, mm-hmm. we got the movement, we've got mm-hmm. the tactile. And like this 1, 2, 3 of God, it's sort of the typology. Mm-hmm. And the different thing about the and so
going to talk about that after break. Totally agree with that.
And different cultures have preferences for different sensory systems.
Yeah.
And individuals and cultures have preferences for different sequences of sensory systems.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think image is becoming our primary language. Just read in the paper today the illiteracy rate. And that's because there's a shift. We're shifting back. So we're going to talk about how do you read an image, all right? And we're going to look at these cultural images and how are those images then, how do we read them with our minds? How do we read them with our bodies? How do we read them with our souls? We're going to then move into talking about that impact on our psyche of these cultural images. Then in the afternoon, we're going to be dealing with personal images, images that come from our dreams, our own stories. We are going to do some making. I love to make. So there is going to be some making. It's going to be very full and I think a really rich day. And that's what we're doing. So if you've got any questions or anything about it, if you're coming, I want you to come. It's going to be great, fun, I hope. Please bring magazines or books or anything that you are comfortable ripping up. But also, even if you're not comfortable ripping them up, one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to talk about an image from media that wows you, where it stops you in your tracks and you go... So that it's important. Everybody's going to be sharing that wow image. So if you've got something that here's an image that wows you, you aren't going to be tearing that one up. That's something, so you can bring that from any source. Okay? Any questions about the workshop or anything?
Any scissors and stuff?
You know, all of those things would be awesome. You know? It's like your tool belt, your accoutrements that you would like. We will have some things here, but all of those things are always nice. to have. Yes. Okay. So now what I have is I have this limited edition portfolio. So the originals are watercolor and graphite. And I have those, and I haven't decided. I haven't decided about where or how or what their life is yet, but I needed to get these out into the world. And so, on the back of the book, which I am happy to you know, if anybody's interested, I'm happy afterwards to sign books if anybody was interested. So I couldn't. You know, it's very expensive to have all these color images, so they ended up putting them on the back. And so how do I get, you know, how are these images going to get out? So there's this portfolio, all right, limited edition portfolio of, there are 100 of these. So what I would really like for you all to somehow come up here, we got to have a little bit of light. And I would like to open this up and share some of these images with you, just so that you can, you know, it's when you see things up here, it's very different. One of the originals, you're seeing them here, and your image is that they're here, and I agree, they, you know, I mean, I love that. For me, they were, some of my work is huge. These pieces are really small. Originals are 6x6. And, you know, it was this very, very, very intimate work, all right? So because they are and were meditations, they're in a sense like yantras. And so I kept the portfolio to be true to that. These images, you'll see, they're slightly smaller. They're 5x5, all right? And I did not make this case, but the case was really important to me. A handmade bookmaker made these for me. He's from Texas, and I designed this. And so.
And that is the end of the recording. This recording was made on DVD, and it included some images. The DVD is available in the library at the C.G. Jung Society, Seattle. The copyright is C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.